What's good, y'all? Your boy Brandon back again. Another episode of the On Run Podcast, man. This week, we took a little venture outside of the studio, and our guest, Chris, here from Savage Fitness. Thank you so much for welcoming us into your gym, bro.
Absolutely, bro. Appreciate it. Thank you for having me. Seriously.
Of course, man.
Absolutely, bro. Yeah, we saw you on a different podcast telling your story, and we thought it was a very, very powerful testimony, a very, very powerful message. And of course, you're killing it in your industry. The gym looks amazing. So thanks again for welcoming us in.
I appreciate that, bro. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So let's just go ahead and get it started. You're obviously in the fitness industry. You've been in the fitness industry for a long time. How have you seen it evolve in Vegas? Because I feel like it can at times be a very competitive and very toxic environment, especially in the recent years. Would you say so?
I mean, I think all environments could be toxic, whether it's fitness, whether it's the industry, whether it's cosmetology. I think all industries are toxic. It's what you put into it. And so I knew I wanted to create a space that was different and unique, and that was going to provide something to the community that I think was needed at the time. I think that was just a space for people to get away from the toxicity and all that nonsense. But yeah, I would consider that. Yeah,
it's, I don't know. I feel like recently, especially with how fast Vegas is growing, it's very competitive. And sometimes you get those little people that jump into every industry trying to just make a quick buck and take advantage of people. I don't know if you've seen that in your industry as well.
I mean, I guess you can. I mean, at the end of the day, though, I think, you know, Vegas growing is actually a good thing. I guess people could say, oh, it's a bad thing. You got all these people that are coming out here. But I also could see it being a good thing, too, because it's building our business. It's building, you know, the amount of people that are coming into, you know, to Vegas. It's bringing – Savage attracts a certain crowd, and I'm confident in what we provide and what we offer, and that's the crowd we're going to offer. That's a crowd that we're going to, you know, I guess, showcase to. So I'm not really too worried about, I guess – people coming in or trying to open a gym or trying to just come into that, you know, that industry and just do their part. You know, people are going to do that left or right. It's really, you know, how you push. And I think if you just focus on yourself, I think that's really what it is, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And what are some of the things that you looked for to incorporate into your gym that really sets you apart from other places that you've seen around the city?
Well, obviously the aesthetic, first off.
Yeah.
The aesthetic's probably the biggest thing, to be real with you. I mean, I had this vision in my head like 7-8 years ago. I visioned this space for what it is like 7 years ago. And it's kind of crazy to like see it come to life. But I mean, besides the aesthetic and vision, it's the community. You know, it's a space where people could get away from the chaos. You know, I dealt with mental health for a very long time in my life. And so I wanted to have a space. I wish this was here 7 years ago, because who knows where I'd be at, you know. But I think I had to go through my, you know, trials to get where I'm at. But this space was built for people to kind of get away mentally. I was a community where people are helping you achieve not just physical goals, but, you know, mental and spiritual goals as well. And so, you know, I think a lot of people don't talk about the mental health and the internal, you know, what's going on internally. And so I wanted to create a gym. Yet, yes, we provide the external stuff, but we also create a community that's going to help you in your toughest times. You know, I think in order to change physically, you actually have to change internally first.
Absolutely.
And so I think that's what really, you know, makes Savage Fitness what it is today. And so, you know, when you, I guess back to your earlier question, when you were talking about, you know, I guess the industry growing, I don't think no one really kind of tags along with Savage Fitness, because we're like marketing ourselves totally different. And so I'm not really worried about anybody else. And
yeah,
so
you're like in your own lane.
Yeah. So I'm not really too worried about, I guess, it growing or not. I know what we're, I'm confident in what we're doing here at Savage, and that's what it is.
Yeah, I definitely feel that. And it's a sad thing. Well, it's a good thing and a sad thing that a lot of the times in life, you have to go through the really dark times to then be that helping hand that's going to say, well, I've been there. Now let me create a place that's going to prevent people from going there or pull people out of that.
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's a very impactful thing. And like you said, health and wellness, it used to be very just physical, like, you know, your physique. It used to be very outwardly. And Absolutely. Now, like, especially what you do is you market a lot towards that crowd that it's a full body workout in the really complete sense, where it's not just the outside, but you're taking care of your mental health. You're making sure emotionally you're well, you're setting goals, you're around people that are motivating you. Because on one of the podcasts that you had done, I think it was with Arthur. Shout out to Arthur, man.
That's my best friend.
Yeah,
so.
I saw that podcast.
Yeah, I don't do podcasts. People ask me to do podcasts all the time, but I do it because Arthur's one of my best friends. And then obviously Quincy, you know, vouch for you guys. So that's the reason why I'm on my second podcast. But I should have done
shout
like
out. Thank you, Q.
Yeah, shout
appreciate
out to my boy
you.
Q
yeah,
for this one.
Shout out to Q. Yeah, yeah. And on that podcast, you talk a lot about how you used to go to certain environments, even though you might not have had the money to really afford it, or you weren't in the best place in your life, you used to go there just because of what the environment would give you, just to hear the conversations of people talking about achieving goals, people talking about moving forward in their life. It wasn't this negativity of hearing people complain about their job, complain about their wife, complain about their life. It's people who are actively moving forward despite whatever obstacles are in their way. And I think it's like you really capture that, and now you're like sharing that to people.
Well, first off, y'all did y'all's research.
Hell yeah. Hey, man. Ain't messing around.
I applaud you guys for that one.
Appreciate it.
But, you know, I think you're telling the story about when I got a membership at Lifetime Fitness.
Yeah.
And so when I got a membership at Lifetime Fitness, I mean, I don't know what the membership is now, but it's like $300.
Too damn much. Yeah. I looked it up recently. It's too damn much.
It's too damn much.
It's crazy.
But the point I'm getting to is, you know, I couldn't afford that membership, right? But the people I were around were obviously very negative, very like, poor me, you know, blame everyone else, point the finger. And I was just in this like environment that wasn't providing me like the opportunity to grow, you know, whether it's family, whether it's friends, whether it was my work environment. So how do you really change if you're just infatuated or, you know, invested in that type of energy 24/7? And so I remember like, bro, I barely paid rent that month. I had like maybe like, I think like less than $200, and I went to Lifetime, got a membership over there. And I remember like every month, dude, I was like late on my payment. And so that just shows you like I couldn't afford that space, but I wanted to be in there so bad because I wanted to be around people that were actually getting it or who I thought was getting it, right?
Of course.
And so I would go sit in the sauna every fucking day, bro. I was there all day from like 5 a.m. to like all the way till midnight, just trying to see like where the crowds were, like who was coming in the morning. It was the entrepreneurs in the morning. It was like the high school kids, you know, during, you know, so there were certain time frames, but I would sit in the sauna, bro, with my headphones on and no music on. And I would just listen to the conversations and everyone was just talking so highly like, yeah, I'm about to go get this done. I just, you know, close this deal. I'm about to go, you know, have this business meeting. I'm about to go grow this. I'm about to go handle this. And it was kind of, it was actually really inspiring. It was motivating because I'm like, damn, I thought all this shit was just on TV.
Yeah,
and like to actually be in this type of environment was like kind of crazy to like partake in. And then I think that's what kind of got my mind going. I was like, what else is out there? And it started like, I think my curiosity started going and I think, you know, we're doing a podcast on my couch in my gym, which is crazy.
Nice ass couch, but
she's comfortable.
No, but
I need to get this to the studio.
For real. But a question I have for you though, like when you were hearing these conversations in Lifetime, mm-hmm. was there ever a thought in your head like, wait, okay, the people around me at Lifetime are like in a whole different plane mentally wise. Like, let me go back to the homies and see. Like, let me bring those conversations back to the homies.
I mean, you know. First off, there's always self-sabotage. So, you know, my inner voices in my head were always like telling me like, bro, you ain't worth it. You can't do it. This ain't possible for you. And so that's a whole nother story. You know, obviously I had to go through like a whole nother time in my life where I really had to dive deep internally and really go into like self-love, self-care. But, you know, with my circle, you know, I would actually try to like, you know, help them and say, hey, bro, let's go get a membership of Lifetime or like, you know, bring those like positive affirmations. But what was crazy is like they were actually like still trying to hold me down and bring me back. And so anytime I would talk positive or talk about growth or opportunity or change, they would almost look at it as like I was trying to be different or I was better than them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it almost caused like this friction. And I'm like, man, it's not even supposed to be like that. We're like supposed to be like collaboration.
Right.
Like I'm trying to help my people like grow and be the best version of themselves while also trying to make the best version of myself. And it was tough, but you know, I realized, you know, you have to cut some ties. And it's unfortunate, like I cut family off too. Like not even like friends, like I cut family off just because they weren't providing me that energy or that space to want to grow and to grow in. And so, you know, it's tough. You know, I like you said, I try to bring it to my friends and to try to bring all the opportunity, but they just didn't take it. And so you had to cut ties because they were, you know, holding me back.
And for those people that, like, was there anybody from the circle back in the day, you know, outside of family, like, are they still around?
It's tough. I mean, there's a few, like, on social media.
Right. But not like, a real relationship.
I mean, there's a few. I mean, there's, like, less than, like, a handful that, like, I would say, like, we're still, like, friends to this day. But they were, like, more on the positive side. They were, like, trying to get out of it as well.
Okay.
And so, but there's a few that are still, like, still slinging drugs, still, like, doing all that negative shit that we were around and, like, I kind of sometimes, and not to like to feel this way, but I feel sometimes they look at me and like either they think I'm better than them or they think like
That you think you're better than them.
Yeah. And that fucked with me mentally because I was really, you know, I'm really for my people and like I had to like really like grow up and like understand like I can't let people's assumptions like dictate on how I live or how I want to live. And so, you know, at the end of the day, people are going to assume whatever they want to assume, whether it's good or bad. And so, you know, I really, you know, needed like the validation from my friends and my family, like I was doing well, but I realized very quickly, like I wasn't going to get that. So I don't know.
This is a, I guess a kind of a harder question to answer, but do you miss receiving the validation from those old friends, old family?
It didn't provide me what it provides me now, though. So, I mean, that validation maybe back in the day would maybe fulfill me temporarily. But, like, the validation I get now, and not even from people, but just from things and from energy, it's unexplainable. And so maybe you've asked me that question 2 years ago, yeah. I'd probably say absolutely, because I do miss that, right? I miss my old life sometimes. I miss the crazy life. I miss some of that shit, but it doesn't fulfill me now, like how I'm fulfilling, how I'm presenting myself in the current life that I'm living in, right?
Yeah.
And so that's really, I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the times when we're in those environments, the fulfillment comes from people because nothing in our life is actually right. Like, it's not working for us. So we accept that fulfillment. We accept that happiness of going out, hanging out with friends, getting into crazy shit. Mm-hmm. But when the fulfillment comes from actually accomplishing goals, like actually putting a goal down and like having a gym, nobody can take it from you now. Like, no matter what, like, before you might argue with somebody and it's like, damn, my validation's gone. But now it's like, who's going to take this, you know? Like,
well, I appreciate that. That means a lot to me. Obviously, you know, it's a lot of hard work and like, obviously, you know, self-belief. I mean, that's honestly, I think what changed my life was actually my own like internal like journey. I think people, you know, want change, but they're not willing to sacrifice what they need to do to change or have a better life or have, you know, the new car or the house or the better job. Like, there's so much sacrifice, and honestly, what it really is discomfort.
Yes.
And people don't want to be uncomfortable, right? You're able to order, you know, groceries at your door, motherfuckers, you know, dropping off groceries to your doorstep. So comfort is everything for society right now. And so, you know, if you want to go chase your dreams and goals, it takes a lot of sacrifice, but it also takes discomfort, and people do not want to be uncomfortable. And honestly, you know, what you're looking at right now was a very, you know, consistent me, uncomfortable and not like by myself, just trusting the process, trusting the man above that, you know, timing is everything. And so I think that's what it was, just people not wanting to be uncomfortable.
Yeah. And I think people don't see that. Like, people assume, because everybody knows, like, if you're going to be an entrepreneur, you're going to be working a lot. But I think the thing that people don't see is how much good you miss also, not just because someone is a negative person or not helping you chase your goals, but just because, you know, like, you can't take a day off. Like, how many birthday parties you don't go to, how many anniversaries you miss, like parties, celebrations, like, I just can't make it. Not because I hate you, not because you're a bad person, not necessarily even because you don't help me feel like I can achieve my goals, but I am on this journey that I can't sacrifice anything for.
Well, it was a couple of things, right? So obviously, you know, my time consumption was the growth of this business and brand, which took a lot of time. And that's like the David Goggins side of things where you have to hustle. There's no like, 7 days a week, 365 days, I get that.
Yeah.
But actually what it was my vulnerability. I wasn't mentally strong enough to say no to like all the like the outside substance.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I was addicted to pills, bro, like alcohol. And so me knowing I was gonna go kick with my boys or go to a birthday party, I knew I was gonna be in an environment that I might have felt, who knows, there might have been an opportunity for me to take advantage of that, right? And so I just said no to it right off the get. And I was like, you know, I can't put myself into that type of space or that type of atmosphere because I'm not mentally strong enough to say no just yet. And I think that takes I think that's really the main factor.
Yeah, it takes more strength than, yeah.
I think that's really, you know, if you really want to change, you have to have that type of mindset.
Yeah.
And you got to understand that you're going to be alone for who knows how long, maybe a month, for 6 months, maybe for, bro, I was alone for like 2 years. People are like, man, Chris is a loser. He's a bum. Like, you know, he don't go out. He don't party. He don't do nothing. And I would hear that in the back of my head. People on social media just talking like, Chris is a loser. But in my head, I was actually trying to like,
I'm trying to win.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying? Yeah. It was crazy. Just, you know, how things just be happening.
Do you remember the first conversation you heard or like a very significantly impacting event that happened that really was like the inflection point to put you on this trajectory? Now, obviously, like, you talked about being in Asana for a long time, but is there a conversation that you recall really vividly?
Well, I mean, it was my self-harm moment.
Yeah.
Right? You know what I'm saying? I think that, you know, anytime someone asks me, how do I get here? I almost have to reflect back to that story. because, you know, besides me being a father, that's obviously changed my life drastically. And I have a beautiful girlfriend at home that's changed my life drastically. But, you know, it was that self-harm moment. I literally put a gun in my mouth. And listen, I have a very expensive gun collection.
Yeah.
Like, very, like, I don't go to Walmart and don't get my pieces. Like, I got some nice, nice, nice firearms. And so the reason I say that is because, you know, it shouldn't have malfunctioned.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Bullet was in the chamber, cocked back. I went in the bathtub because I'm a Virgo. I'm very clean. You see how OCD it is?
Yeah.
Right? So I didn't want to get blood on the floor. So I went in the bathtub. I text my, now my girlfriend currently, text her and just said, I love you. I text Arthur and I let him know. I was like, hey, you know, this is what it is. Pulled the trigger, didn't even go off. And I was like, is it safety on? Nope. And I almost like just stopped what I was doing. I was like, what the fuck? So I put the gun down, hopped out the bathtub, looked in the mirror. It's the first time ever that I said three words. I love you. Never said that ever to myself, right? And that's the first time I looked at my inner child and I said, I love you. And my inner child was like, what? What the fuck? I've been beating this motherfucker up since, you know, day one. And for him to like, kind of like, I never felt that. And it was the most realist, vulnerable, like sincere moment I ever experienced in my life. And till that day, like, I'm like, that gun did not go off for who knows the reason, but it's because I need to be here to tell my story, to help other people that are struggling with mental health, bro. Like, people don't talk about mental health. Like, I literally have a conversation almost every other day with someone in this space that's saying, hey, just know, like, I've been struggling this week, but just because you created a space like this, it saved my life. Like, you're helping me get to just get to another day, right? Fuck saving my life. You just helped me just get through today just because of all this. And I think that's the reason why that gun didn't go off, because I think, you know, the man above had a bigger purpose for me. And now I'm seeing it. And that's also the reason why I'm on this podcast, because I'm a very private person. I don't tell nobody about my stuff, but I understand, like, stuff like this needs to be said to inspire the next generation. And maybe the person that's struggling right now, that feels like they're alone, that feels like they have no hope, that feels like, yo, like, I don't want to be here. Like, keep pushing. Keep pushing. I promise you all, you keep pushing, promise it'll pay off. Like, hopefully I'm like that, you know? For hopefully sure. I show that.
Yeah, but absolutely. Winding back, though, like, because when you were talking about when you were in that mirror, that was the first time you ever told yourself, I love you. Mm-hmm. Growing up, did you ever hear that, like, from someone else, a parent, you know, a loved one, like, or was that sort of absent?
I mean, it was like, I love you, but it was like always tied to something. Like, I love you, but you have to go be good. Or I love you, but you have to, you know. Like, I never really, like, I didn't have a bad childhood, but I didn't really have no, like, push to go be great. Like, they were just cool with, like, just being safe. Mm-hmm. Like, and I feel like as a child, you really have to go challenge them to, like, go be your best. Go see what you can do. Go fail. Go try. Just go try. And, you know, I lived in an aggressive childhood too. Like, my dad, you know, was very physical with my mom, and not really physical, it was actually the more emotional, like, you know, just calling out of her name. And I think that stuck with me and my sister a lot growing up. Like, my mom would chase my dad around the house with a knife because she just called him cheater for the 20th time. And then the very next day we're at Peter Pirate Pizza, like a family. And I was confused. I'm like, so my dad could treat my mom like shit, but that's what love is, because no matter what that person does, you're still gonna love them. Mm. And so it confused me as a kid, because I started dating girls and I realized, and I only dated Latinas, and so I'm a Latina guy. So I'm over treating my girls like this, and I realized, damn, they ain't down for this. Like, they leaving me and they breaking up with me. I was like, oh shit, I guess this doesn't work. And that started making me realize, like, my dad treats my mom like shit. Mm. And to this day, they're still together, right? And what blows my mind, my mom should have left that man 10, 15 years ago.
That's that old school love.
Yeah.
It was different back then.
It's different back then, yeah. But it also didn't make sense because it fucked with me mentally. It fucked with me emotionally. And, you know, it's still to this day, it fucks with me, right? My emotions are still sometimes everywhere. And so, like, back to your question, when I said I love you, that's the first time I actually felt I love you in the most purest form.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what kind of like woke me up and kind of like spit me going, like, yo, like, I love you. So just start focusing on that, and like everything else will fall in place.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because I feel like us growing up as minorities, obviously you're Asian, grew up in a Bay Area, mm-hmm. African, Hispanics. Like, mm-hmm. sometimes when your parents are coming from like a different culture, a different background, mm-hmm. we don't have that culture of telling our kids like, I love you. It's more like you should be grateful because you got a roof over your head and food on the table, which we didn't have. And you're almost like expected to just know that they love you. But when you grow up in America, I don't know what it is, if it's the culture, like the country, like whatever the case may be, but sometimes it is missing. Sometimes you do need to hear that, and you don't realize it until, like you said, you're growing up and all your relationships are strained and you don't even know why. Like, you don't know, why am I acting out this way? But it's because I've been seeing it my whole life. So now when I act it out, it's straining my relationships. Now I'm confused. Now I don't know if I'm right or wrong because I didn't even realize anything was wrong with me. So now I got to fix something I didn't even know was wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it fucks with you in all levels, mentally, physically, and spiritually, you know, because these are all old habits. As a kid, you know, you're a sponge. And so you're just soaking everything in, whether it's good or bad. And you have no clue. You really can't divide it yet because you don't know what's good or bad just yet. You're just such in a vulnerable state of just like a free spirit. And I think that's what's so great about being a kid. I think me being a dad made me see my, you know, my daughter like, she's this free spirit. Like, it's so cool to see her creative side and just grow. And like, man, I miss that. Right. But also, you know, as a kid, you know, you soak everything in. You know, you look up to your parents, as you should. But, you know, sometimes your parents don't provide you the best positive energy and love. And so you're soaking in all this nonsense, but also, you know, whatever else is in between.
Do you think that after you had you have a daughter? Is that your only child?
No, I have two.
Oh, you have two daughters. Yeah. Okay, that's awesome, man. Do you think that after you became a dad, like, in a way, it almost made you become a kid again because you kind of get to see them grow up again, like, see how free they are? Do you think that inspires some of those feelings in you again?
Well, I think that's what got my creativity going, right? And, you know, obviously, you know, everything you see in this space, you know, I think creativity is actually a huge part that saved my life as well. Because, you know, when I dealt with depression and anxiety and all that, I would just kind of float into that creative realm. And I think that's what got me into, you know, painting, into the moss, everything you see in here right now, you know, I've done. And so, you know, it's pretty cool to see that. But, you know, just, you know, the kids, you know, are very creative. They have no, like, box they live in. And for them to just be like, I'm gonna be an astronaut. I'm gonna be a this, and they don't understand like the logic behind it.
Yeah.
But they just have that thought process, like I could do anything. And then it's the parents that are usually like, well, no, you gotta go do this.
Yeah, exactly.
My parents are like, yeah, let's just go be a, you know, go work at the casino, go work at the union, make your $18 an hour, and once you retire, you're good.
And then you straight, and then you straight. But it's like now, like $18, that's poverty. So I'm like, goddamn.
In the 90s, you was living like a king.
No, for real, $18, yeah. Oh, you balling. Yeah, off $18, real. But kind of anchoring off of that, like growing up, you grew up in the Bay Area.
Uh-huh.
What was the Bay Area like in the, I'm assuming, what, late 90s, early 2000s? Like,
damn, I'm old, huh?
Yeah. I didn't want to say it.
You Asian, though. Y'all Asian, bro.
My mom's white, though, so my dad's Filipino, so I'm only half Asian.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I guess, you know, the Asians don't age well. You never see, like, a middle-aged Asian, too.
Ever, yeah.
You
they're see, like, a 150-year-old, yeah, or they're, like, 19.
So I'm doing well. Yeah. I'm doing well. But, no, I grew up, you know, it's the childhood I grew up to. I grew up on the streets. Like, even though I had, like, a home to be in, like, I didn't want to be in there because I hated it. I hated seeing my dad. I had such a bad relationship with my dad. So you're not going to be somewhere where you don't like. So you're on the streets, you know. Yeah. And I got in a very young age, started hanging out with the kids that were selling weed. I was selling weed in middle school. I got jumped into a gang in middle school in the middle school bathroom. And so I started, you know, hanging around with all those people, right? Started selling drugs, started doing drugs. And so, I mean, honestly, I think that's what it came, because I was so like, I did not want to be at my house, that I was forced to go hang out with other men or other boys that also didn't
love. Were parading as men.
Yeah, that was parading as men. And so I think that's what's happening with these kids, is that we're not getting the love or that response that we're looking for to be a good human being. And so we go into the streets to hope to go find that. And then we're hanging out with 10 other dudes that have the exact same feeling. We're all mad and upset, but we're like, well, this is a brotherhood. And we're all doing aggressive shit. You know, we're robbing motherfuckers. You know, we're getting into fights every fucking day. We're doing drugs. And so just to cope, it was a coping mechanism. Because, you know, my dad's not telling me how to deal with my emotions. He's not saying, hey, go grab a journal. Let's go write some affirmations.
Exactly.
Come here. Let me give you a hug. Because I just feel like you need to feel this right now. Never got none of that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm over here. And the shit I'm doing now, like I'm, you know, writing in my journal. I'm saying affirmations in the car. If I did that fucking 10 years ago,
he gonna call you a word we can't say on here.
Exactly.
But,
I'm not gonna say it, but you know what I'm saying? That was not it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So it's crazy how like things have changed in a good way, though, you know?
Yeah.
So
don't you think that's kind of sad, though? Because sometimes I think about that too, and I'm like, damn, like how fast you grow up and things just happen, and you don't even, like, it's almost like you're just thrown into it. You just wake up one day and it's like, I'm in a gang now and I'm smoking weed every day and getting into fights. And to think, like, sometimes I don't have kids yet, but I think and I'm like, damn, when I have a kid, like, I would hate to see my kid be like 13, 14 and like seeing that also. To me, it's like, bro, no, like, I don't want that. Do you feel that way too?
Well, I think our actions actually, you know, dictate everything, you know. Our actions, you know, inspire just the people around me. Hopefully, you know, this podcast today, whatever I said today could inspire you three to, you know, move in a different direction, you know, whether the direction's, you know, going to last or just maybe it's temporarily. But I think that's why I'm so big about vibrations, frequencies, and all that, and affirmations, you know, what you listen to, you know, who you surround yourself with, how you talk about yourself. And same thing with these kids, right? So energy is everything. So how you talk to them, how do you inspire them, how do you motivate them? What are they listening to? Are they just on YouTube, just scrolling and just getting all this nonsense? You know what I'm saying? There's shit on YouTube right now. I'm like, kids be listening to this?
Oh, man, yeah. No R&B, just straight drill. I'm like, God damn, bro.
For real.
18 tracks, I'm going to kill you. I'm just like, God damn, what the fuck?
And they know it word by word.
Yeah, yeah.
Word by word. And so, like, you know, that's what's teaching them. That's what's teaching the next generation is, you know, I call it this brainwash stuff where everyone's just like, you know, the music we listen to right now. I mean, I'm back in the day where I listened to Tupac. I listened to, you know, Nas. I listened to old school Jay-Z. And you could close your eyes and they would tell you a story. Now you listen to music and I'm like, first off, I don't know what even they're saying. And then half the time it's just on a repeat, like, fuck your bitch and like, let's do cocaine. And I'm like, what? Like, that's crazy.
Well, I think the artists you named, like Tupac, Jay, Big, all them, like, they would tell you about the streets, but they would say, hey, don't do this shit. Like, Hov literally said, Hov did that, so hopefully you wouldn't have to go through that. Do not do this shit, bruh. I got lucky.
Yes.
Your ass ain't gonna get lucky. You gonna catch a fucking jail sentence.
They were poets.
Yeah, exactly.
They were poets. Yeah. So they were a little bit like, I don't know, they just, honestly, you know, Nipsey actually is one of the biggest rappers that probably saved my life, because what Nipsey was doing, you know, he lived that life, but, you know, the way he talked, he, you know, he would paint a story, but also what he was doing in his community, right? He was giving back. And that's what also, Nipsey Hussle, hands down, one of my favorite musicians, one of my heroes of like all time. And so when I post my checkered flag, it's because it goes to him. Because, you know, he represents a lot more than just music, you know. He was, you know, with Dr. Serby talking about, you know, trying to cure cancer. I might get shot. I might get killed.
Nah, you straight. You don't got a record deal. You
would take it.
No.
You brought up Dr. Serby.
Yeah, Dr. Serby and shit. But kind of winding back, though, I just want to paint, you know, the larger picture. So you're in the Bay. When do you decide kind of, or like, what motivated the move to Vegas?
Well, I've been out here for a while now, right?
Right.
So, you know, I went out to, you know, high school out here and all that. It's because I wanted to get away from, like, my certain crowd. And just, again, I was being bad, and so I wanted to come out here. Or my family came out here, so we came out here. And I went to high school at Centennial. I don't know if you're all familiar with Centennial.
Yeah.
But it was a bunch of white kids up there. Yep. So I was like, oh, this is cool. I'll be good.
He was doubling his money.
But those white kids were just as bad.
Exactly. They were the bullshit, too.
Like, they had, like, these fat-ass houses. And, like, they were like, I'm like, why are y'all bad? Like, I'm trying to, like,
yeah, I'm
like
trying
them.
To be like, yo, y'all blessed.
So I was confused, but they're the ones that actually got me into pills. Like, I had the white homies that we would go snowboarding, we'd be snorting Xanax, you know, the yellow school buses, they'd be doing Rockasets, Percocets. The parties were, I think, a lot more crazier than the
because hood parties don't last too long. They just get shot up, and, you know what I mean?
And ain't no money up there.
Yeah, hell no.
So, you know, I would go to these, like, fat-ass houses and, like, mansions, their parents are like on a vacation. Like, yeah, we just
the parents is always on a vacation. I'm sorry, I literally just went to a mansion party like 2 weeks ago and shit. Parents was in Paris.
I
said, boy, shit. My parents could barely afford to go to fucking San Diego. I'm like, God damn.
For real. So, you know, it was crazy to actually, you know, me hanging out with those kids, actually, I feel like I actually went even a deeper spiral
because
I started doing pills and I actually started getting really deep into alcohol. Like, Sailor Jerry, I don't know if y'all know Sailor Jerry, but it was a spice rum. I got her tattooed on my leg because, you know, that's how, you know.
Well, I know about Captain Morgan because it's behind
Captain
the camera.
Captain Morgan, yeah. It was Sailor Jerry's just another version of Captain Morgan, you know, so same thing. But yeah, actually, I think I got worse when I started hanging out with those kids. And so any of my white homies that are listening to this, just know y'all fucked me up. Like, my whole life changed.
I don't know my camera angle. Don't mix benzos and alcohol. Just pro tip, but...
So yeah, that was a big change on that.
But then going into that, like, because obviously you were bartending, but like I'm trying to track it. Was there ever a rock bottom when you were doing the pills and whatnot to go, holy shit, if I keep going at this rate, I'm not gonna be here much longer.
Well, after I graduated high school, I joined the Navy, right? And I was in the military, I think, for maybe like less than 2 years. And so as a guy, or as a, I don't want to call me, call myself as a man, because I wasn't a man. No one at 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20 is a man, right? Because you have to go through so much in life and you have to like really evolve to get that title. But, you know, I was 18, 19, graduated high school, had no clue what I was doing. I barely graduated high school. My mom was going to the counselor's office almost every day, like, okay, what does he need to do? Okay, can I get the extra credit so he could get his grades up? I barely graduated high school. And so I was like, what do I do? And like, I wanted to make my mom proud, so I joined the Navy. Fuck that, you know what I'm saying? Holy shit. You know what I'm saying? Holy shit. Just because the way they talk to you is just, I'm a person, I don't care if you're a janitor at a grocery store or if you're the president of the United States, at the end of the day, we're all human beings. And so at the end of the day, it's respect. And so I don't know, these nerdy ass white dudes just talking to me like crazy. And I was like, oh, we not going to.
Early morning, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, we're not going to do this. Yeah. Like, you're not going to talk to me a certain way. So I had a cool little chief in the Navy. And he was like, you know, the only way to get out of this is to say you're suicidal. And so I remember saying I was suicidal. I was gonna jump off the boat. And so he put me in like in one of those like, no, for real. That's a true story.
That's a true story.
Wait, that's a true story.
Hey, everybody in the Navy right now just got to drive. I'm gonna jump off the boat. Y'all don't let me off this motherfucker.
Don't yell
that's
at me.
Crazy.
That's
crazy. My niggas ain't even jump off
that's
the boat.
That's a true story too, bro. So I said, I'm gonna jump off this boat for like I can't be here. I'm gonna jump off the boat. So they put me like in this padded room for like a couple days. And
on
like
the had, boat
with a straight yeah, jacket.
That's crazy.
No straight jacket, but it was in a padded room. For yeah. I remember this Damn. Too. And you get like a medically discharged because if you get dishonorable or not, I don't know, was it medical discharge? But it wasn't dishonorable because if you get dishonorable discharge, you ain't getting no job. Yeah. That's probably worse than getting a felon. You know, I'm see to be real with you. And so I got discharged from the Navy. And then I started, that's when I went into like this place of like, I was trying to find myself. Like I see people on social media and social media was a fluke back in the day because it's MySpace and Facebook. So people are just posting the good things. So I'm looking like, damn, this guy's doing this. Like, and I just got kicked out of the Navy. Like I'm not doing nothing. So I went to school to be an electrician. I hated that, quit electrician. Went to school to be a surgical technician. Hated that, quit that. And then I got into bartending and that's when I kind of like, it was fun. That's when I was like, damn, this shit's fun. But also it comes with a price. Yes, you're making good money. I was crushing it, bro. I was making like $5 to maybe sometimes $1,000 a day in tips. Like I was working at a Voodoo Lounge at the Rio. Like I got into flair bartending and that's where I was like making the money at. And it's union too. So you're making like $18 an hour plus tips.
Plus tips.
Bro, that's, motherfuckers are retiring. There's people that are probably that are on watches are like, damn, I'm still doing that. And like, good for you. It's good ass money. But what came with that was, again, the energy, like people are trying to come party. They're trying to like leave their life and go like get away from all the negativity or they just got fired from a job or just their spouse cheated. So they're looking for drugs or looking for party favors. They're looking for that energy. And so us as bartenders, we're a sponge. We're sucking all that in. And so I did that for maybe like 5-6 years. I was crushing it financially, but I wasn't happy. And I remember cold turkey one day, my baby mama, I told her, I was like, I'm quitting. And I cold turkey quit one day. And she's like, you're fucking dumb. Like, what? Like, how are we gonna pay our bills? And I was like, I'm not happy. Like, I'm not. And maybe I did it drastically, but sometimes you just have to jump.
Yeah.
Without even worrying about what's down there, whether it's water, whether it's jagged edge rocks.
Yeah.
You just have to go jump and just trust the process.
Metaphorically, what he's saying.
Jump off that boat, metaphorically.
Yeah, jump off the boat.
Don't literally do that shit. Yeah. Don't take that advice. Yeah.
No, but it's true. Like, I think, and a lot of times people don't understand that because they don't know the burden you feel by being unhappy. Mm. Every day I'm going to work and everybody's telling me I'm killing it. Everybody's telling me I should be proud. Mm. I know I should be proud, but I fucking hate it here. So guess what? I'm out because I'm the one that has to come here every day. Y'all don't got to come here. And if you did, like, go for it. It's right there. Like, there's going to be a vacancy tomorrow because I'm quitting.
Back.
At the end of the day, there's nothing bad with bartending or nothing bad with like the Navy. So I just want to like backtrack and say, you know, if y'all do that and that's a career, please. At the end of the day, y'all just have to be happy.
Yeah, we need servicemen. Yeah,
We do need servicemen. Hopefully, I didn't give y'all a cheat code on to get out. So just bear with me on that.
It's about to be CNN next week. 20% of the Navy has said they want to jump off a boat. No, but back to that moment with the mother of your child. You tell her, yeah, I'm quitting this bartending shit. She's not happy with it, but what's your next move after that?
I was actually, I had an opportunity at EOS, or it was Gold's Gym at the time on Lake Mead in Buffalo. And I was actually working out there. And I remember one of the managers like, hey, you ever thought about being a personal trainer? And that got my mindset going. And that's when I said, you know what? I'm going to just cold turkey. Quit bartending, became a personal trainer at EOS. Shout out to my homie Charles, who gave me the opportunity for that. And then I did that for like a month or two. making like $11 a session, maybe even $7 a session. I don't know what it was back in the day. Again, this was like in the 2000s, so who knows what personal trainers make. And just reference, I make like $150 a session now with personal, with my clients. So I was making $7 to $11 back in the day. And so just know the math difference on that, right? And so I quit bartending where I was making guaranteed money. Every time I go to work, I would be leaving with money. I quit that cold turkey and just be fully focused on personal training because I was like, this makes me happy. It kind of helps me. You know, as a man, you don't know how to deal with your emotions. So back in the day, you would just go to the gym.
Of course.
Right? You go to the gym, lifting heavy. I was on a little cycle. I thought I was like doing my thing. I really wasn't, but I thought I was doing something, but I felt good, right? And so I was like, I'm chasing stuff that makes me feel good now, right? I was at a point where I wanted to find stuff that was making me like fulfill me. So I became a personal trainer at EOS. I was doing that for like 2 months, became the assistant manager pretty quickly because I was good at talking and hustling. And then I met Jay Cutler. So Jay Cutler is like a Mr. Olympia.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know that at first because I'm thinking Jay Cutler, the quarterback. And I'm like, oh, shit.
Oh, from the Chicago
Bears. I was like, oh, damn. And so anyways, I met him. His assistant, Vince, came up to me and said, hey, Jay Cutler wants you to train his girlfriend. At the time, her name was Monique. And I was like, yeah, for sure. Let's do this. Like, and everyone, all the trainers were like, what? Jay Cutler? I'm like,
who the fuck is that?
Yeah. He's like, he's on the wall. There's like a picture of him on the wall. I was like, oh shit. Okay.
Okay.
All right. I didn't know this.
Oh, he's so, the logo for those damn shit.
And so he handed me, I think he gave me like $600-$700, which was the most. And again, I was making like $7 to $11 a session. So I was making a lot of money. He handed me money. My manager at the time or someone up high found out that I got cash from him. And they're like, yo, you have to either give us that or you're fired. And I was like, damn, like I just got $600-$700. And that was a lot for a personal trainer. Yeah, I got a trainer for like 10 times. I was making $70 a session on that. I was like, bro, what? So I quit. I was like, I'm not giving you that money back. Jay Cutler introduced me to Jay Jung, who was the owner of City Athletic Club. And he also now owns Kilo Club, but City Athletic Club. And that was like the infamous go-to bodybuilding gym in Vegas. And that's where I started, like, that's where I took off. Right when I got to City Athletic Club, you had every single person in there from bodybuilders to, you know, prep coaches to you name it. And I remember just being a sponge. I took all my money and I just said, hey, I want to train with you. Shout out to Team D. Shout out to Project Wellbeing. Shout out to, you know, Tony, Gustavo, Jay. There was many people that I wanted to learn from. And like, hey, how do you diet? How do you program? How do you cycle? How do you do this? How do you do that? So shit just started clicking. I was there for like 4 or 5 years, bro. And that's when people are like, man, I can't be uncomfortable that long. Like, I want to see like the reward now. It doesn't work like that, bro. I had to sacrifice. I still wasn't making money. I honestly just started making money like 2-3 years ago. Like, and I've been doing this journey for 9 years in the fitness industry. And so the first 6 years, bro, I ain't making shit.
Exactly.
But I believed in something bigger. I believed in where we're at now. And so I think people, if you have a vision, I tell people all the time, whatever your will is, whatever your why is, you have to just be so engraved on your why, because your why is going to stay, keep you consistent and hold you down, even in those darkest times, even in those times when you don't see a reward just yet.
Yeah.
Right?
So kind of, I want to stay there for a second. Obviously, you have the clientele you've built up over the few years. Mm-hmm. When does that conversation come in your head? Like, you know what? I got a clientele. I think I'm going to build out a gym.
I think I was like, I think year 4, year 5, when I was just going to gyms, because City Athletic Club got shut down over some crazy shit. I won't discuss that, but it got shut down for like some crazy shit. And I went to Kilo Club, which was a dope gym, but they were doing some scandalous shit on the back end, so left that. And then I went to a couple small gyms in between, and there were just... And what I'm getting to is like the gym owners, the owners of the gym really didn't care. They just wanted to... Hey, if you're gonna pay rent, just make sure your client pays membership, and it is what it is. Right? And like, there's a lot more to this. Like, and I think that's what made me create this space is because one, I was on the gym space. I was a trainer. A lot of people are just becoming gym owners and never even trained in their life, or at least personal trained, so they don't understand like the whole foundation of a gym. Like, it's the personal trainers, it's the community, it's the energy, it's the way we know the communication. It's all that, right? And so I wanted to also the aesthetic suck too. I was like, This is what they thought was a cool look.
Got us working out in concentration camps.
Yeah,
like,
I was just like, this shit ugly as hell. Yeah. Like, these colors don't even match.
Like, you know, I'm back in the Navy.
Yeah.
Wanted to jump off of that a couple times too. So, but you know, the aesthetic was obviously one of the biggest things, but I also realized, you know, these gym owners are complaining about how they hate owning a gym, and they're like, yeah, it is what it is. But I'm like, bro, you're not doing it. And I'm not saying I knew everything, but I was just like, it's the little things that actually go the long way. It's those little details that actually take it to the next level. And so that's when I was like, started putting one and one together. And I was like, I think I could do this.
Yeah.
And then that vision stuck. And then honestly, like I said, I literally saw this gym exactly what it is right now, 5, 6, 7 years ago in my head. Like, it was so engraved in my head on what it was and what I wanted to be. And so when we got the keys to this place, it took us like 3 months to build this. Because I already knew exactly what I wanted. The contractor, I was like, okay, this. There was no like question like, okay, what do you want to do here? And I'm like, oh, give me a week. Let me figure it out. And I was like, do.
But again, it was because you had spent years and years and years not only thinking about what you wanted, but also seeing what other people were doing wrong and how you would do it differently.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, you know, trial and error is definitely huge. And I think that's where I'm at today because, you know, I failed every single way possible. I'm not successful if I didn't fail. Like, I failed every single way possible. I had repossessions. I had, you know, eviction notices. I would go into the grocery store and check my balance before I even went in the grocery store. And I would do the math in my shopping cart to make sure I wasn't going to be the one that was embarrassed by the cashier saying, hey, your cart got declined on the microphone.
Yeah.
Right? And then everyone in the line's like looking like, oh, this fucking idiot. That was one of my biggest fears was But, you know, I failed every way. And same thing with the gym thing. I've seen people fail and I've experienced, and I think I needed all that. I know I needed that to create all this. And that's why we're in this space right now. And that's why we're doing this podcast, because of my failures, not because of my successes, because of my failures. Mm. And that's the reason why we're here right now.
Yeah, man, it's an amazing story. It's an amazing story.
There's still more to like, you know, tack on. Like, I mean,
he wants to know my credit history.
No. For me, like when I was doing research for the episode, I was just like, you know, I think a lot of entrepreneurs, I think what I've admired about the entrepreneurs I know is that they don't really get caught up in waiting for the right opportunity, right? The perfect opportunity is today. So what's it called? What was I going to say? For like all the entrepreneurs I know, they just go ahead and jump. You know what I mean? We got to stop using that word jump. But like they don't really sit back and go, okay, like let me wait and let me save up all this money and let me go, you know, ask this person. Like for a lot of people, I think like they will go like, oh, ChatGPT, how to open a gym. So for you, like, after you have that initial vision of I'm going to open up a gym, most people would probably go, oh, shit, now I got to really do this shit. Whereas for you, I think you're somebody that just like, all right, keep going. So what was those next initial steps after saying to yourself, I'm going to do this for real?
Well, first off, I want to backtrack a little bit because you said, you know, most entrepreneurs jump. And actually, you know, I do a mentorship program right now where I've been helping other, you know, people like live this dream of owning a gym, mm-hmm. or whatever that looks like. And actually, I think the problem is people are not willing to jump, right? And so I think people are just waiting for that perfect moment. Like everything has to be perfect. Their finances, their time of life, you know, their relationships before they make that big move. And like I said, I quit bartending cold turkey, right? I quit Navy cold turkey. I quit everything. And who knows, maybe that's not the way to go, but I mean, it's doing something right now, right? And so I think you only live once in life. And so you have to take that opportunity full force. You can't half-ass it. You can't second guess it. You have to go all in. And so actually, you know, when you said people with entrepreneurs, I actually think that's what's actually wrong with a lot of entrepreneurs. Right? They're not willing to just jump. Mm-hmm. They're so worried about the risk. But in order to get reward, you have to get risk. And so I think that's what the problem is with most entrepreneurs is they're just waiting for that perfect season or the perfect weather to go all in. I was like, no, you have to go all in. Like, just go.
Yeah, and you'll never figure it out. Come. The perfect's never going to come.
Yeah. The perfect's never going to come. And like I said, if your why is really engraved in like how we talked about, you're going to figure it out. Like, I figured this shit out. Like I said, I struggled every way. I wanted this so bad. I believed it. I felt it. I saw it. I knew it. When I talk to people are like, man, this motherfucker's crazy. Like, no, I promise it's coming. Because my why was so invested on my belief system and how I was, my thought process. And so, yeah, I don't even know where that question was going to, but I had to backtrack on that jump part because I actually don't think entrepreneurs jump.
Yeah.
I think that's really what it is. But, you know, once I figured out, you know, what I wanted and what I wanted to do, then I had to create a game plan. And that's when I started talking to my mentors. You know, I started talking to, you know, I have a couple mentors right now that have helped me, you know, with this. hey, what do I got to do? Do I have to go get a loan? Do I give a get an investor? Do I get a business partner? What do I do? I have to, you know, all this. And like, I didn't know none of that. They don't teach this shit in high school.
Or college.
Sorry.
Yeah, they
don't. They don't teach you how to build credit or, you know, how to get loans or, you know, LLCs and, you know, all this. I'm like, I didn't know how to write a business proposal. I'm over telling my person, yeah, I want a dope gym with plants and all that. And the investor who has millions of dollars, they're going to be like, okay, but how are you going to get it?
Right.
So then I had to create like a flip book that was like, yeah, I'm asking this much. And I felt so accomplished. I felt like a fucking Harvard graduate when I gave them that. Because it was like the references. It was like the clientele I was looking for. It was how I was going to market and advertise. It was the promotions. It was all the events. It was so detailed. And they're like, oh. Because no one sees my vision. No one sees your vision. No one sees y'all's vision. And so you have to be so passionate about your vision to inspire that person that's listening to you, for them to either believe you or not. And whether they believe you or not, it's really, who cares? You have to still go.
Exactly.
And so, you know, your people are going to be like, oh, this fool's fucking crazy. Or they're going to be like, damn, I'm fucking hyped just you telling me that story. I tell people my vision and I'm like, damn, like, let's go. And then some people are like, bro, this fool's cool.
But it's not for them to understand. It's for you and us to understand.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's really what it is. You know, at the end of the day, you know, it's your story. You're the one that has the pen in its hand. And so there's a blank page in front of you. How are you going to write it? And I just wanted to make sure I took full control on that. I don't want to let no one, that, you know, take my pen. I'm still writing. You know, I say it all the time. I'm just getting started. Like, this is only the beginning. We've only been open 21 months. And what I see, my bigger vision, I won't say it yet, but my bigger vision's a lot bigger than this. And we're actually on the path to go get there. You know, so I'm excited for that to come. And so, you know, I'm just enjoying the process now.
So with that overarching vision that we've been talking about, like, kind of speak to when, I don't know if you still feel like this or not, but like when you like kind of were able to look back away from the sort of quote unquote painting, like, okay, I'm done. This is fully functional. Like, holy shit, I got a gym now. What was that moment like?
I can't even answer because it's not done yet.
Right.
Like, I'm only, it's like, if you look at this space, a lot of people are like, damn, you're done. I'm at like 60%.
Wow.
I see about, like, there's still so many more things we need to get done. We still don't have all the pieces of equipment, right? There's still, you know, expansion to come. We still need more space. We're low-key outgrowing this space as we go. And so, you know, and we're only in 21 months in, which is a good problem to have, but also we didn't think we'd have this problem so fast. We're at 200 plus members. We're out on wait list right now, and we're only on 21 months in. So it's like, and we're not even at 100%. Like, so when you say this is the finished product, it's not. So I don't know if I can answer that question because this ain't the finished product.
Or let me rephrase my question. What I meant was like that first day of business, like, okay, I'm done, you know, painting the walls and, you know, putting equipment, like, okay, now I really got to get motherfuckers in here and shit.
Yeah.
What was that like, that process?
It wasn't actually that stressful because I just believed in, like, I was going to build something that was going to just grow itself and not like be lazy on that hand, but like I knew the value that I provided in this space. And so I just trusted the process, right? I hired the right people, hired the marketing team. I hired a front desk staff. I hired people that were good at what they did. And so that's the thing too. A lot of times we try to figure shit out. As a business owner, just find someone that's good at what they do and just go talk to them. Whether you pay them or not, talk to them. Like, stop trying to be like egotistic, which I was back in the day where I wanted to be like, I am the man, like I do everything. Like, it's me or nothing. And I realized very quickly, I am gonna sink that boat very quick if I run that process. And so as opening a business, you know, with my business partner, Jamie, and our team, we have a solid team here, bro. On the back end, we have, you know, we have a legal team. We have, you know, a person that checks our taxes. We have a financial advisor. We have, you know, fitness coordinators. We have a marketing team. We have, you know, all that. And so people think it's just me. I wish I could do a podcast with my whole team right now because you could see how many heads it actually takes to grow a business and brand. And so I trusted my team that we were able to get it where I needed to go. I painted the vision, but I trusted everyone else to like get me there. Obviously, I have to get myself there too, but I think that's why I'm so confident because I'm confident in who I have in my circle.
Yeah.
You know, and also, you know, 21 months in, there's a lot of people that's been in this space that is no longer in this space. And, you know, it fucked with me a little bit too. I'm like, damn, like these were my people. Why are they not here? And I realized, you know, at the end of the day, you know, people, it's a season. They come and go. And you got to understand, like, you know, sometimes maybe they're not meant for you in the future. Maybe they're only meant for you right now. And, like, they can only take you so far. And now in order to get to the next level, you need to get a new wave of people in. And honestly, we just dealt with that. And, like, to be honest, this has been the last 2 months have been our best ever since at Savage. energy wise, business wise, everything. And I just dealt with a journey, just the last chapter of like losing some close people in my life. And I'm like I said, back in the day, I was trying to like bring my people to success. I wanted to take them to that table, but I realized I can't take people that don't want to go there. And so I had to let them go. And then here we are, we're growing.
You know, it's kind of like the Nipsey quote, you know, everybody can't go.
True.
Yeah.
That's a good one, actually. Yeah, no. I live by that one.
Yeah, yeah. And that's kind of the thing I kind of noticed with like a lot of the entrepreneurs we've interviewed on the podcast is that like the entrepreneurs, like the sole person might have a vision, but you need people around you that are just as motivated in your vision as you know what I'm trying to say?
Mm-hmm.
Like kind of speak to that too. Like, do you see like the people you work with, like do you see yourself in them?
Well, yeah, you have to, because in order for that vision to come to life, they have to believe in that vision. And that vision is you, right? And so they have to almost invest themselves in that vision in order for the space to grow. And I think that's what's actually pretty dope. And so it's not even the gym itself. It's the people that believe in this, right? And that's actually, this gym could go right now. And I feel so confident that I could build this again with the team I have, because they're not saying they gave up on their dreams and goals, but I think their dream and goal was to help grow this business and brand. You know, whatever it is, you know, we have franchising opportunities right now. Like, who knows where this goes? We might have 5 more locations in the next few years. Who knows, right? And just to have people in my circle that are really like, your vision, I'm all in. I love it. I believe in it. I'm for it. I'm investing in it. And these people are loving Savage just as much as the owner himself. And so I think that's what's really motivating and inspiring. It's not even the space that we're in. It's the people that are in this space that literally believe in it as much as I do. Right. And so I don't know if that has to do with how much passion I brought into it, how much, you know, energy I brought into that. But the people now are all behind me like, let's go. Like, I have a unit right now behind me. I feel unstoppable.
Yeah.
To be real.
Yeah. That's no. And I don't want to commend you on that as well, is because like I think something I've noticed too with entrepreneurs that are successful, they are their brand. Right. Like we said that on the episode with Mike, like he is Mr. OTA. And same thing with Chris, he is Mr. Savage. Like literally, like, I mean, I met you in the parking lot, but then like when we were able to talk one-on-one, the first thing you said to me was, oh, what do you think of the place? And you were proud of that moment to be able to like talk to somebody you never really met before. Like, you see the work I put in behind this. Yeah. I told you, I was like, man, this shit big than a motherfucker. Like
the first time I came here, the first thing I like saw was like, it's branded everywhere.
Yeah.
The name is everywhere. Like no matter where you go, you see the name, you see the brand. So it's definitely something that you can tell it's at the forefront. It's not something that's like, yeah, we're just a gym. You come in, like you don't ever see the name everywhere, but you know, it's on the outside of the building. No, here, like no matter where you go, if you take a picture, you're going to see Savage. If you post on Instagram, you're going to see Savage. And even if the name wasn't there, just how different it is, you can tell
it's an iconic design.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That too. And I think what sets Savage apart in the fitness space in Las Vegas is that, you know, most people, they could go to a bigger gym, right? EOS, we don't have to say the names, whatever. But when you go to those places, you're just a number. You're just on a spreadsheet. It doesn't matter. Yes. Here, the reason why I think people are attracted to it is because people are looking for community, right? There's a thing, you know, has been going viral for a little while, is that people are looking for the third place, which means like outside of your work and your living space,
in your home,
the third place, right? So for most people, it might be the bar or... Mm-hmm. You know, some people go to church, whatever. A lot of people in this country, it's the gym, mm-hmm. right? So in Las Vegas, like, Savage is one of those places.
Absolutely.
And that's what I think differentiates you from everyone else, is that you could work out anywhere, but it's the people here that make it different. It's the you talking about your vision. That's like, okay, I want to go here because Chris has a vision and I want to help that out. Mm-hmm. Whether it's, you know, me buying a smoothie here, me working out, Q doing content, whatever, like, it. You know, people love waking up every day to have purpose. Mm-hmm. If you're just waking up to work out, eventually you're going to get tired of that shit. You're not going to go back. You're going to cancel your membership because you're going to get bored as fuck.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, like, kind of speak on that too. Do you kind of like wake up with that? Like, oh shit, it took a really long time, but I have purpose now.
Yes. You know, that had to do with a lot of, you know, internal work though. You know, I think, you know, I had to figure out my why and what was it that was going to keep me going. Because like I said, I didn't want to live. Mm. And so I didn't have no purpose no more. I was just so tired, bro. I was just so exhausted and just drained, just living my life. Like, I wasn't happy. I wasn't fulfilled. And it was kind of selfish, but I was, like I said, I was willing to let myself go. And so that took a lot of practice. And I think that's one of the hardest things I ever dealt with is, you know, going within. Like you said, you cut your friends out, you cut your past life out to get the new life you want. And so unfortunately, you're going to be by yourself for a very long time. You know, I was by myself for about 2 years. And so I'm in my head, listening to my thoughts, listening to my demons. My demons are literally anything you can imagine. It's telling me you're a piece of shit. You're a loser. You're never going to make it. You're not worth it. All that. And so I had to go in, change my perspective. That's why I got a membership at Lifetime. Started like just being around that energy. And that made me like start questioning my life and like, what can I actually do if I actually go all in? And once I started questioning that and my curiosity went like this, then I started painting that picture of what it could be. And I think that's when those moments became where I started getting fulfilled. And not all at one time, but it was little things that started fulfilling me. And I was like, oh, I like this feeling. And so I started chasing it. And I think the more and more I did it, the better and better I felt. But really what fulfilled me is actually now helping other people. Like, talk to people all the time. You know, the last few years, I've had people come to me and say, yo, Chris, just your story alone saved my life. I have people from other states that are like reaching out to me like, yo, like, you know, what you posted on your story the other day, man, I just want to say, you know, thank you, because, you know, I've been struggling. Or, you know, my current clients, they're like, yo, you saved my life. I'm like, wait, what? Like, not even thinking I'm no one special, because I'm not no one special. But for them to, like, come to me and say, yo, like, you really, like, helped me. And I'm like, damn, maybe that's the reason why that gun didn't go off. So, yes, I fulfilled. But like you said about gyms, like, it's community, right? People go to those local bars and those their favorite restaurants. Why? Because that server, right when you walk in, they're like, yo, what up, Chris? And doesn't that make you feel so good? You're like, damn, he knows my name. It's fucking Jay in the back. What up, Jay? Hey, Chris. And you feel so good. And so that's why people seek that. That's why they go to those bars. That's why they go to those restaurants. So here at Savage Fitness, same thing. We have 200 members, and we know every single person by its name. We talk to them. I literally, my system with my staff is like, introduce yourself, talk to them. How are they doing? They know, like, hey, how was that interview yesterday? Hey, it was your birthday. Happy birthday. We send them texts and all that. Like, those little details go such a long way, and those little things are going to make Savage what it is and what it is becoming. And so, yes, you know, like, we're branded everywhere. Marketing and advertising is, I was smart with that. I know how to brand and market and advertise, but it's the systems behind that that no one ever gets to see. And that's where the community comes in play. And that's why people are seeking this space. It's because they want to be a part, they want to partake into it. And that's what's going to really make us what I vision in the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
Right? It's that community and it's that growth.
And something I want to kind of speak on too is, like, obviously we talked about this on the last pod, but it's Men's Mental Health Awareness Month right now. And like, for you, as someone that has went through, you know, tragic events before, like I kind of said this on the last pod, I was just like, you don't, you know, it's weird, like, as a man, like, when you deal with your mental health, like, when you go through something traumatic, when you go on when you go through the other side of that, there's no sunshine and rainbows. It's just like, all right, there's another day. You don't get like a cookie for it. Mm-mm. So for you, like, how would you say your mental health is now, considering obviously you have monetary success and, you know, success on paper, but you're still somewhat that Chris from back in the day? Like, is there still an internal battle there somewhat?
Oh, 100%. I still, to this day, this moment right now, I still deal with depression. I still deal with anxiety. I still deal with, you know, stress. People think I'm extroverted, but I'm actually truly an introvert. And so, like, stuff like this actually gives me anxiety and kind of overwhelms me. And then my demons come in playing like, bro, what are you doing? You don't deserve to be on a podcast. Like, who the fuck you think you are? You're a celebrity. And so those voices come in my head. So, but from my past and what I've dealt with and what I've gone through and what I've came out of has gave me the tools and confidence now to, like, overcome those voices. So it's a lot easier to deal with those voices now than it was 3, 4, 5 years ago. And that's, like you said, back in the past, when you're trying to change, it is so hard because you don't have the confidence, you don't have no results yet, you don't have, you know, the community to support you in that. So it's the most difficult thing to change. And I listen, anyone that's listening right now, if y'all are struggling, y'all just have to take it one day at a time, because that's all I did. I took it one day at a time. And so, you know, a lot of people, they do one good day and they expect a cookie at the end of the day. It doesn't work like that. There's no cookies. You know, you might not even get a cookie for another 2, 3 years. And so you have to trust that process and just trust, you know, what I'm doing today is going to get me to where I need to be. So.
And I think about too is just like the conversation on men's mental health, especially in this country. Like, I think it's like been hyper driven in the last few years, obviously due to recent events and whatnot. But like, I think men, we're really good at like masking it. whatever the fuck we're going through doesn't matter. Hey, as long as we have to be able to produce capital. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the purpose of like men in this country. Like, because as soon as you start producing capital, or if you tell motherfuckers, oh, you know, I want to be a poet. Well, shut the fuck up, man. What the hell are you talking about? You know? So for you, I think like a lot of those people that are around you back in the day, they couldn't see the Chris now. They only knew Chris then. Yeah. You know, so when you explain your vision to people, like I always laugh about it, it's like whether it's a podcast, a gym, you want to take a photography, whatever, people only know you at that very moment. It's very hard. A lot of people aren't really good at seeing the next 5 to 10 years, right? So for example, like Q behind the camera, like he's been my best friend since I was 15. And, you know, I mean, he could speak about his life whenever he gets the chance on here, but like, I saw the Q today. You know what I mean? If I don't tell you enough, like, I'm so proud of you, it's ridiculous. Like, but a lot of people I know around him at the time, they were like, man, Q, he just want to be outside and be light-skinned and party all day. Like, he ain't talking about shit, but
he
like...
light-skinned.
Light-skinned than a motherfucker. Yeah, but yeah. Like, that's kind of the thing, like, those people now, from back then, when they see you now, is it weird? Like, they're like, oh shit, Chris, you actually doing shit. What the fuck? Hey, bro, let me get a free membership. It's like, nah, you shitted on me, bro. And oh, wait, I remember.
There's two parts to that, because you have like the past where they're like you just said about Q, you saw current Q.
Yeah.
And those are good people you want to keep around.
Yeah.
Because those people believed in you when you didn't even believe in yourself. And there's very few of those. And so if you get a person like that, rock with them. Like my lady right now, we were best friends, you know, 7 years ago. And so she rocked with me when I wasn't shit. And she believed in me. She's like, Chris, you don't understand how great you are. And sometimes I would literally be crying in the bedroom, like, I'm not. Look, I'm failing. Like, I'm so behind on bills. Like, and she saw something. And so, like, you just see in Q right now, not comparing you to me and my lady, but you know, you and Q,
yeah,
you know, obviously. Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. A little bit, yeah.
Q's my lady. So, yeah. You're
you gonna get jealous. He's gonna be like, I've known him since I was 15.
So, anyway, so you have those people like that really do see that. And those are people you keep, because those are like gems. You want people like that. But then there's people that, like, for instance, that last podcast I did with Arthur, there are people that are like bashing me on that one because they're like, you lying. That ain't you. And that's the past Chris, because they're not used to this new Chris that's talking right now, that's talking about self-care, self-love. They're almost like, dude, Chris is an actor now. Who the fuck does he think he is? But I had to change in order to grow this, right? And so they're just so infatuated with past Chris, because I think it makes them feel good about their current situation, that they're almost like, yeah, he's a fraud. That ain't the Chris I know. But you don't know the current Chris. And honestly, a lot of people don't know the current Chris, because my personal life is so private, right? No one knows about my family. No one knows about what I do, what kind of cars I drive, you know, my house, because I keep that private. And that's something for me and myself. And so people that say they know me, it's not many people that actually know me. And so you're going to have those assumptions of like, oh yeah, Chris is a piece of shit, or Chris is a loser, or Chris is a fraud. It is what it is. People are going to think what they want. And I don't really care no more. And honestly, me having that thought process has brought so much peace to me. And honestly, my peace is like keeping me happy now. And that's actually been helping with my depression and my anxiety and stress, because the peace that I have like now on how I think and how I move has kind of changed the game for me.
Yeah. And I think my last question, if I have any more questions, let me know. But like, what does Chris today tell the Chris back then? Like, if you just walked by Chris from 15 years ago, what is that first thing you tell him?
I love you. Like, quickly, not even like hesitate, like, I love you. Just because that Chris didn't believe in himself, that Chris didn't feel love, that Chris just, he was so hurt. But I was so good at masking my pain. No one ever knew I was hurt. I was like the class clown. I was the funny one. I was the one that was cracking jokes and like trying to make other people laugh, because I didn't want people to like really see like what was going on within. And so I masked my emotions very well. And so, but that Chris was in so much pain. He was hurt. He would go to sleep sometimes in tears, because I'm like, man, I'm struggling. And like, I had nobody in there for me. And so like, I would literally just tell him, I love you. And I think if he heard that, he would almost have the confidence to keep on pushing, which, I mean, he did. Obviously, I'm here now.
But, yeah.
He would have a little more confidence in how he moved, because I think he just wasn't sure of himself, because he was just trying to fill so many shoes, and he was trying to fit in, and like make certain people happy and realizing like those people are not nothing for me. And so I don't know. That's it. I love you.
Yeah. And if it wasn't Savage, what, like, could you even think of it would be something else?
Well, I joke car about wash. This. I joke about this all the time.
Wash? Savage car wash.
Yeah, I want to open a car wash. That's actually the next.
Why?
It was a joke at first. Yeah. Like we actually all took it as a joke because you know, owning a business, bro. There's so many trials and errors in here too. Yeah. You know, we're losing members. We're dealing with like rude ass motherfuckers. I'm like, hold up, you ain't gonna talk like that to me. But then I was like, oh, we're in a customer service. Like, okay, let me back up.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I'd just rather get a car wash where I don't have to deal with people. Like, you know what I'm saying? So we joke about it. But actually, now that I'm like for real, like I'm really gonna work get a car wash. And like that's gonna be my next thing. But yeah, it was just because I didn't want to deal with people. Because you know, I'm an introvert. People think I'm an extrovert, I'm an introvert, y'all.
Same. Yeah. People see my personality on here. What up, Noah?
For real.
I just stare at you.
That's one thing. You can't predict people. You can predict machines. Right.
There it is.
It's kind of what it is.
Yeah. And I thought the maintenance would be a lot cheaper too. So who knows? I think like if someone told me like to do a car takes like 10 cents of the product to wash. I'm like, yeah. I just paid $22 to get my car washed in one of those drive-thrus right now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It's crazy. Well, Chris, thank you so much for opening the doors to Savage to us. Thanks for letting us come in. And even more thanks for opening up because, you know, like you said, you're an introvert. But I do think that hopefully our audience was able to learn a lot from you, from your story. And yeah, man, we can't thank you enough.
Well, I appreciate you guys.
Thank
you guys
so much. And please, please tell them where they can follow you.
Savage Fitness, SVG3 Fitness on social media. I don't run my social media. My staff does. So if you try to message me, you're probably get one of my assistants. So that's how it is. But yeah, I appreciate you guys. Thank you for your time. And thank you for, you know, coming to my space and just showcasing what it is.
Absolutely. Go ahead and follow the guys, man. N2DATK.
The number 2DATK.
Yeah, on all social media platforms. Ocho Benji on all social media platforms. Follow my personal Instagram. Is going to be at 1OTRB. Follow the podcast page, On The Run Podcast, ontherun.pod, on all social media platforms. Thank you guys so much. We hope you enjoyed this episode. We'll see you guys next week for another episode, man. Peace.